Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode contains distressing themes and descriptions of violence. This podcast is intended for a mature audience. Listener caution is advised. At the beginning of the 20th century, new medications were being discovered and created. The term miracle drug was coined to describe the sudden positive effect of newly discovered remedies for once untreatable diseases and conditions. But one person's cure can be another person's poison. Welcome to They Walk Among Us, a podcast dedicated to UK true crime. This is the 37th in a series of bonus episodes. Thomas Skinner was roused awake by the sound of pounding at his front door on the night of May 3rd, 1957. It was about 11:20 p.m., and he and his wife Anne had not been asleep for long. When Thomas gathered his thoughts, he walked down the stairs and opened the front door. To his surprise, his next-door neighbour, Kenneth Barlow, greeted him. Kenneth was dressed for bed in his pyjamas and wrapped in a dressing gown. He urgently asked Thomas to call the doctor as something had happened to his wife, Elizabeth. The two men raced to the Barlow's home next door, bounding up the stairs and then into the bathroom. Elizabeth was lying motionless in the bathtub. Her husband rubbed her shoulders and then broke down in tears. While Thomas ran to find a doctor, Kenneth returned to the Skinner's home and told Anne it was too late. His wife was gone. 31-year-old Elizabeth Cunningham was born and raised in Derby. Until her mid-20s, she had lived close to her parents, employed as a textile worker at Reichneld Mills Limited on Bridge Street, where she had grown up. In the early 1950s, Elizabeth moved to Bradford and worked as a ward auxiliary in several hospitals in the area. She remained single until she crossed paths with 38-year-old Kenneth Barlow. Kenneth was a widower. His first wife, Nancy, died while they were estranged, so Kenneth was raising his 10-year-old son Ian as a single parent. While getting to know each other, Elizabeth and Kenneth discovered they had something in common. They both worked in the medical field as state-registered charge nurses. After their wedding in June 1956, Elizabeth moved in with Kenneth and his son Ian to start a new chapter in her life on Thornby Crescent, a quiet residential street in Bradford, lined with identical beige semi-detached houses. Just under a year later, on May 3rd, 1957, Elizabeth was working part-time at a laundrette near their home. She finished her shift around midday. Elizabeth's colleagues remembered her leaving in good spirits and telling them about her plans to wash her hair. Arriving home shortly after finishing work, Elizabeth joined her husband and stepson in the kitchen for their Friday lunch of fish and chips. She spent the afternoon doing some chores around the home, then popped next door to speak with Anne Skinner. After Kenneth Barlow finished cleaning his car, he joined his wife and the Skinners. Mr. and Mrs. Skinner said Elizabeth was in good form when she left and was full of life. At around 5 p.m. she had an evening meal of toast, grapefruit and a cup of tea with sugar. Once Elizabeth finished eating, she relaxed on the settee, but she seemed restless. According to Kenneth, Elizabeth told him she was feeling tired. At 6:30 p.m. she changed into her pajamas and lay in bed. Around an hour later, Kenneth went upstairs to remind his wife that a television show she was looking forward to was about to start. Elizabeth told him she didn't want to get out of bed. Ian's bedtime was at 8 p.m. and usually Elizabeth would say goodnight to the little boy in his bedroom. On this night, however, she was too tired to move. Kenneth later described how Elizabeth shouted down for him at 9:30 p.m., and when he went into the master bedroom, he saw she had vomited all over the bed. Kenneth stripped the bed clothes and changed the sheets, after which he decided to call it a night himself and got into bed. Elizabeth was tossing and turning. She complained that she was too hot to sleep beneath the covers. After a few minutes, she got out of bed and told her husband she was going to run a bath, perhaps to cool herself down and freshen up after she had been sick. The sound of water filling the tub lulled Kenneth to sleep. He woke up suddenly about an hour later. Elizabeth was not on her side of the bed. Kenneth called her name to see what was taking her so long in the bathroom. His wife did not respond, so Kenneth got out of bed and opened the bathroom door. Elizabeth was still in the bath, but her head was under the water. Kenneth said he tried to pull her out of the bath, but the water made it difficult. He was unable to get a firm grip on her body. He changed tact and used one hand to pull out the plug while holding her head above the waterline. When the bath had drained, Kenneth put Elizabeth on her back at the bottom of the tub. Once in this position, Kenneth, the registered nurse, performed CPR. As soon as he realized his life-saving attempts were futile, he alerted his neighbors. After a doctor and police officers arrived, Kenneth Barlow relayed an account of the evening's events. The doctor had been the first to attend, and he saw Elizabeth in the bath, who exhibited no signs of life. He knew to wait for the police to arrive to avoid disturbing the scene. Elizabeth was lying in the bath on her right side, her knees bent upwards, and her hands resting just below her chin. Detective Sergeant Naylor with the Bradford Constabulary noticed a series of peculiar circumstances in the bathroom. The walls and floor appeared to be dry, with no sign of condensation on the tiles. Two vomit-stained pillowcases were soaking in the sink, and a damp pair of sweat-soaked women's pajamas were crumpled on the floor just outside the bathroom. A routine search of the home was conducted, and Dr. David Price, a forensic pathologist, was requested to attend the scene. The doctor arrived in the early hours just after 3 a.m. Members of the local CID were already at the Barlow's property, as well as scenes of crime officers and police photographers. Dr. Price made a preliminary examination of Elizabeth's body in the bath. She was lying in what he described as a natural sleeping position, curled up on her right side. Blood-tinged froth had run out of her nose and onto her hands, and when her body was moved, bathwater that had been trapped in the crook of her right elbow flowed down towards the drain. Elizabeth's body was eventually removed from the property and taken to the mortuary, where a post-mortem was conducted at 8 a.m. Dr. Price examined her eyes and found petechial hemorrhage as well as extreme dilation of her pupils. In fact, he said that the pupils were so enlarged that they almost covered her entire iris. Elizabeth had been around 8 weeks pregnant, but there was nothing to suggest anything was wrong with the pregnancy or her major organs. Her lungs and respiratory tract were congested with blood-stained froth, which illustrated that she had drowned. However, Dr. Price was suspicious. Although he found no signs of a violent struggle during his examination, Elizabeth's dilated pupils suggested she could have been under the influence of drugs at the time of her death. Blood samples taken from the inside of her heart were sent to Dr. Alan Curry at the Northeastern Forensic Science Lab, along with a urine sample extracted from Elizabeth's bladder. Dr. Curry found that Elizabeth's blood sugar level was elevated, but there was no sugar in her urine. The results contradicted each other. Blood sugar levels rapidly decrease after death as any stored sugar in the body is used up when bacterial action begins to break down the cells. Dr. Price referred to studies he had read that showed that blood in the right chambers of the heart was an exception to this process, and instead of the blood sugar level declining, it would rise. Elizabeth's blood samples were clear of drugs. Still, Dr. Price and Dr. Curry wanted to re-examine the body for injection sites. Kenneth Barlow was a trained nurse, and during a search of his home, officers discovered 2 hypodermic syringes, 4 needles and some quinine, a medication that was used to treat colds in the 1950s, but is now used as a malaria treatment. Due to the contrasting blood sugar results, Dr. Price considered the possibility that Elizabeth had been injected with insulin. Insulin is naturally produced in the pancreas to regulate blood sugar, and the creation of insulin as a drug was hailed as a miracle for diabetics. In the 1950s, insulin was also used to treat mental health conditions like severe anxiety and schizophrenia. Patients would be injected with insulin, which would cause their blood sugar levels to decrease rapidly. Extremely low blood sugar is called hypoglycemia, and symptoms include hunger, weakness, tremors, and eventually patients slip into a coma. Insulin is absorbed into the body very quickly after an injection, so the best hope the investigators had of detecting it was to look for injection sites. Elizabeth's body was re-examined under better quality lighting, as the first post-mortem had been conducted in the early morning. Using a magnifying lens, Dr. Price examined Elizabeth's buttocks and found 4 marks that he suspected were from hypodermic injections. 2 pieces of skin, fat, and muscle were then cut from the area that appeared to have been injected a few hours before her death. Those samples were frozen, while Dr. Price consulted with multiple specialists to come up with a series of complex experiments that would allow them to test for the presence of insulin. Dr. Gerd from Boots Drug Company's research lab found over 80 units of insulin in the tissue sample taken from Elizabeth's buttocks, over twice the amount needed to be consumed by a diabetic patient in one day. The insulin level would have been much higher before death as it dissolves quickly, 100 to 150 units were typically used to put psychiatric patients into comas. The tissue samples were eventually broken down, and extracts were taken to be injected into mice. The mice reacted as though they had been injected with insulin, further proving Dr. Gert's results. In mid-July 1957, Dr. Price listed Elizabeth Barlow's cause of death as asphyxia due to drowning while in a hypoglycemic coma caused by an overdose of insulin. As it would have been incredibly challenging for Elizabeth to inject herself in the buttocks, Elizabeth's husband Kenneth was brought in for questioning. At the station, Kenneth Barlow was told insulin had been found in his wife's system. In response, he said, "That would have killed her, depending on the amount that was used." When asked if he had injected her with insulin, Barlow adamantly denied that he did, but did admit that he had been injecting Elizabeth with something else, ergometrine. Ergometrine is a drug that induces contractions within the uterus, and Barlow told the investigators that at his wife's request, he had been helping her to end her pregnancy. He said that Elizabeth found out she was pregnant around 5 weeks prior to her death. It was not welcome news. She told her husband she would rather put her head in the oven than have a baby. Barlow admitted to taking ampoules of ergometrine from a hospital he had been working at until a few days before his wife's death, and injecting her with the drug several times in the lead-up to her passing. The forensic and bioanalysts had already checked for known abortive medicines in Elizabeth's system, and they didn't find any, nor did ergometrine produce a reaction that would explain what happened to Elizabeth. Kenneth Barlow was charged with his wife's murder on July 27, 1957, and he was committed for trial.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Legal proceedings began at Leeds Assizes in December of that year. The majority of the Crown's case had been heard 2 months earlier at a committal hearing when prosecutor J.R. Hovell Thurlow Cumming Bruce said that Barlow, a trained nurse, had injected his wife with insulin at least twice before she slipped into a coma and drowned. During the trial, Barlow sat in the corner of the dock and wept openly as the evidence was presented. His neighbour, Ann Skinner, who had seen Elizabeth hours before her death, testified Barlow was very much in love with his wife. Ann told the court, "He was kind and considerate towards her right up to the end. I have never heard him say anything which suggested that he wanted to be rid of her. I never heard any rows." According to Ann Skinner, Elizabeth had shared her concerns regarding her unplanned pregnancy, and on May 3rd, the day she died, Elizabeth confided to Ann that she was going to take medication that would, quote, get rid of the baby. Ann urged Elizabeth not to do anything dangerous. Elizabeth replied, "Don't worry, I won't kill myself." Violet Forsyth worked with Elizabeth at the laundrette and told the court how she seemed dejected in the days before her death. Elizabeth had admitted to Violet that she didn't want any more children as they already had 10-year-old Ian at home. Molly Jackson, a secretary at Bradford Infirmary, said from her point of view, the couple appeared to be happy. Kenneth Barlow had told her about Elizabeth's pregnancy and that Elizabeth had been asking him if there was anything she could take to end it. Molly recalled that Barlow had told his wife not to think about it. Solicitor General Sir Harry Hilton Foster QC led the prosecution. He told the jury that apart from the scientific evidence, there was nothing to justify accusing Barlow of the killing, but the Crown believed the evidence showed that he had injected her with insulin. Sir Harry added, "You may come to the conclusion that he had determined she should not bear the child she was then carrying, but apart from that factor, there is no sort or kind of reason outwardly why he should have desired her death." Ellen Simpson, a matron at St. Luke's Hospital, where Kenneth Barlow was employed as a charge nurse from November 1956 to April 1957, said his duties included administering injections. Ellen told the court that the accused had access to insulin. The matron explained that there was no strict checking of the number of units used as it was not classed as a dangerous drug. However, she did think it was important to mention that 3 ampoules of ergometrine, which was a restricted medication, did go missing from the ward in early April. William Corbridge, a charge nurse who had worked with Barlow at Bradford Infirmary, said that the defendant had spoken to him about finding Elizabeth in the bath and the investigation into her death. Barlow described struggling to lift up his wife and attempting to revive her after draining the water from the bathtub. He went on to tell William about the discovery of insulin in Elizabeth's system, but he had no explanation for the finding. He thought she must have been injected by someone else. Barlow did, however, admit to his former colleague that he had administered ergometrine to Elizabeth. He said he had warned her about the dangers of taking the drug. When William asked Barlow if he was sure he hadn't used insulin, Barlow said he definitely did not, as it wouldn't bring on a spontaneous miscarriage. The defence alleged that Barlow had injected his wife with ergometrine on 6 occasions at the behest of Elizabeth. In response, prosecutor Sir Harry told the jury, whether he administered ergometrine or not, he may very well have induced in his wife consent to the process of injection, and under cover of giving her ergometrine to get rid of the pregnancy, injected insulin. The final injections can be shown to have been insulin, and the relevance of ergometrine to this case is only that it explains how he persuaded his unfortunate wife to consent to the injections which killed her. Nora Hicks, who had worked with Kenneth Barlow at St. Luke's Hospital in April 1957, testified that he had told her about a time when Elizabeth had passed out in the bath and how he had to lift her out and revive her. Barlow had not told this story to the police when Elizabeth drowned, and the prosecution alleged that he did not even attempt CPR when he found her in the bath on May 3rd. Her body was on its side, and bathwater was still trapped in the crook of her arm when the doctor arrived. If she had been moved, the water would have been displaced. Detective Sergeant Naylor recalled how Barlow's sleeves were dry and said, "He did not appear to me to be particularly upset. There were occasional sobs. They didn't appear to be genuine." Further damning testimony from several of Kenneth Barlow's former colleagues followed. Harry Stork had worked alongside Barlow at a sanitarium in Driffield 2 years prior. He recalled a conversation with the accused where Barlow had commented, "You could commit a perfect murder with insulin. It could not be traced because it dissolves in the bloodstream." Joan Waterhouse had been a nursing student at East Riding General Hospital in Driffield when Barlow worked there in 1954. She recalled how he told her, "You could kill somebody with insulin as it cannot be found very easily in the body unless it is a very large dose." Kenneth Barlow entered the witness box. During questioning by his counsel, Bernard Gillis QC, he continued to deny injecting Elizabeth with insulin. Barlow said he was deeply in love with his wife, and always would be. Gillis told the jury that to convict the defendant, they would have to be sure that it was proven that there was insulin in Elizabeth's body, that the insulin resulted in a coma that led to her drowning, and that Barlow had been the one to inject her with the drug. The prosecutor would argue that there was enough evidence to exclude ergometrine or natural causes in Elizabeth's death, and the complex experiments had concluded that there was more than enough insulin in her system to cause death or a coma. As he was summing up the case, Mr. Justice Diplock said that the greatest skill and care had been applied to find Elizabeth's cause of death. "Valuable information has been obtained which will be of value in other cases, if other cases of this kind shall arise." After 85 minutes of deliberations, the jury returned with a verdict on December 13, 1957. Despite insisting that he did not inject his wife with insulin, Kenneth Barlow was found guilty of murdering Elizabeth. Before Judge Diplock had a chance to pass the sentence, Barlow called out, "I did not murder my wife. Somewhere someone must know something more than has come out in this court, and I would beg leave to appeal." Mr. Justice Diplock described Elizabeth's death as a cold, cruel, carefully premeditated murder, which, but for a high degree of detective ability, would not have been found out. Kenneth Barlow was sentenced to life in prison. So where are we now? Kenneth Barlow attempted to appeal his conviction without success. At the time of his release in 1984, he was the second longest serving prisoner in the UK. Age 65, Barlow had been moved from HMP Kingston to Layhill Open Prison near Bristol. A portion of his sentence was served in Wakefield. His release had been delayed for weeks following an anonymous call from someone who felt compelled to report that Kenneth Barlow's first wife, Nancy, had also been killed in the same manner as Elizabeth. Nancy had not died in a bathtub, but her death was suspicious. She was unable to communicate what had happened as she was in a coma before she passed away. After an investigation was undertaken, it was ruled that Nancy Barlow's untimely demise was caused by encephalitis. Therefore, it was agreed that Kenneth Barlow could be released on license. A friend of Barlow's, Fred Stancliffe, who had been campaigning for his release and exoneration for decades, said, "We talked about freedom, and he said he did not know if he wanted it now." After being incarcerated for so long, Barlow was eager to be reunited with his son, Ian. He firmly believed Ian could help him prove that he had not killed Elizabeth. By then, his son had reached middle age and had a family of his own. Ian's wife said, "We have made our life away from him. We want nothing to do with him in any way at all. He has never seen his grandchildren, and they are unaware of him." Ian's solicitor added, "Our client was only 10 years old at the time of this incident. He has no information or recollection which could assist Mr. Barlow in establishing his innocence." Kenneth Barlow was the first person convicted of murder with the use of insulin, but many others followed suit. In 1974, Sister Jessie McTavish, a nurse at Rockhill Hospital in Glasgow, was convicted of murdering an elderly patient with a drug. Sister McTavish was freed on appeal the following year due to a judicial error, but her case was used in nursing lectures at Dundee University and has been said to have inspired one former student, Colin Norris, to commit the same crime. During a trial in 2008, Norris was found guilty by majority verdict of murdering four patients. The prosecution argued that the elderly patients' deaths were due to hypoglycemia, which it was alleged had been caused by insulin injections. Other notorious UK cases where insulin was used include nurses Beverly Allett, who was convicted of killing four babies in 1993. And Lucy Letby, who was convicted of killing seven babies in August 2023. Letby attempted to kill two of her victims with insulin, which was what alerted medical staff to her actions. Thank you for listening. And special thanks to our patrons for their support. For more information on this episode, please see the show notes or visit our website, theywalkamonguspodcast.com.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.